school children out of nowhere? Because we will tell you a tale of Joseph and the amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. This week on Broadway Baby, the podcast taking one casual theater goer to full out fangirl, we decided to watch Joseph on Broadway HD. And what a time was had. I'm your host, Kimberly Schmidt, here with my husband, Jay Schmidt.
Hi.
And our baby, Alex Fasella.
Hello.
Oh, goodness. How are you, Alex?
I'm pretty good. How about you guys?
We're good.
We're fine. You know, we're all...
I wrote down, like, all of our segments, and I said, baby meets world. And I was like, well, he's not allowed to be in the world, so what do you met?
Funny you should say that. I found a way to meet worlds where I haven't gone outside because, first of all, I have grown a beard, and from some angles, I look like young Sondheim. From some angles, current Lin-Manuel.
All right.
Sondheim. Lin. Sondheim. Showing the sides for the listeners. Two, I've been having Broadway dreams. I've gone inward for worlds.
But how appropriate for Joseph.
Yes. Oh, you're right. Yeah. First off, I had a dream that I got cast in the In the Heights movie as Usnavi's 9-year-old son, because I read much younger than I actually am, and that I was trying to balance shooting with getting my work from home stuff done so I wouldn't lose my job but also wouldn't piss off Lin-Manuel Miranda. And if you know the show In the Heights, Usnavi doesn't have a 9-year-old son. My brain can't.
Yeah.
On some level, my brain can't handle that I'm not in and it wrote me apart. And second of all, I dreamt I auditioned for Girl from the North Country, which, if you don't know, is the Bob Dylan jukebox musical. I dreamt I went into a casting office, and they gave me, like, a filing cabinet full of Dylan songs I could sing. And I was looking through, and I was like, Dark Eyes, Every Grain of Sand. And I was like, hey, I'm not loving these songs. Can I just pick my own? And they were like, okay, if you want to. And I did like a scorching rendition of Maggie's Farm and the room went insane and then I woke up. So I assume I got the part.
Good job.
Yeah.
That's a show I completely forgot about.
I can't forget about it.
Now that Broadway is closed, that's a show I forgot.
Yeah.
Was there?
That's probably going to close, right?
I have no predictions for anything at this point.
Yeah. Well, Frozen closed officially. They're like, we're not coming back, which is...
Yeah. You saw that, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
There was a really interesting Forbes article when they first opened about the disappointing box office sales that I highly recommend.
Really? Huh. Oh. I thought that would have made bank.
No. I think everyone kind of forgot that it was not a hit.
Huh. I just assumed it was. That's interesting.
No. Yeah. Oh, I highly recommend going back to that Forbes article.
Okay.
It's really interesting.
And last of all, I've started doing, in between our regular episodes, I've started to interview fans from the show for like little 15-minute mini-sodes where I ask them about their history with theater and, what shows are they like dying to introduce me to that we haven't covered yet and things like that. And it's been really fun so far. I did one which will now already be released, with Brenda Martinez, aka Flute Girl.
Brenda!
And I did one with Liz Hersey, who is a really good writer for Screen Rant and a novelist and stuff, and she's a big fan. And I've also decided I'm going to start interviewing people from my life before I loved theater who remember me, like, bitching about how much I hated it. So I want to get people from all over the transition.
That's fun!
Yeah. Yeah, and so I say this. Also, I know someone who was in the original cast of Year in Town that I really want to talk to. So I'm just saying this to put it out on blast. Listeners, if you want to be on Broadway Baby, hit me up at Twitter, Broadway Baby Pod, and I will interview you for 15 minutes-ish, give or take.
Don't hold them to 15, you know?
No.
Sometimes, yeah.
Guys gotta do what a guy's gotta do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that
busy. I don't know either, but I just laughed because I assumed it made sense.
Thank you.
That's all the world.
You're laughing at cadence alone. Have we met a world?
Is there a world left to meet?
Is there a world to meet? Have I been outside? Have I been inside? I don't know the answer, Dad.
I don't think, yeah, other than Joseph, I don't think it's really been.
For my day job, we've been hosting 1 p.m. snack times, a snack along for the kiddos.
That's cute.
And this week was Frozen week, ironically. And yesterday, Jelani Aladdin, Broadway's Kristoff, came on as our guest for the sing-along snack-along.
That's cute, actually.
Yeah, because he went to college with one of our teachers, and he was, like, talking about being in Frozen, and all the kids were just staring because they're, like, four. And then we asked if anyone had questions for him, and the first question was, how do you know so much about Frozen? Because it was just like this man alone who like clearly doesn't have children. And they were like, why does this young guy know about Frozen?
That's so funny.
Who are you?
So cute. And then another girl asked him, because he said he like knows a lot about Frozen because he knows the people who wrote it, was his answer. Because he had already explained that he was in the show.
Yeah.
And then someone said, so do you know everything about Elsa? And his answer was, no one knows everything about Elsa. So
that's the perfect answer.
And he was just so good and so cute. Oh, so that was like the little bit of world that I met.
That's fun.
Watching kids like the moms were fangirling and being like, we saw it. You were great. And the kids.
Yeah, he was really good.
Do you know Elsa? Because they think she's real.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cute.
It was very cute. And one of the girls, everyone was wearing like the Elsa shiny dress. But one girl was wearing Elsa's nightgown that she wears when she's a kid. Like the kid
deep cut
nightgown. And I was just like, oh, that's what I would have had.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's, yeah. I would have been like, no, the cozy dress that she wears at the beginning when she's my age, please.
I love when children or when anyone, but especially when kids, if they know a character so well, they pull out like a deep cut costume. You're like, oh, she's only wearing that for one scene. You really like this movie, kid. I'm impressed.
Yeah, well, Disney sells it. So
how long do you think
you're going to kill it at Comic-Con in 20 years?
I know, Julia.
How long do you think it's going to take them to revive that show?
Frozen?
Only because once this generation of children grows up, there's going to be that nostalgia factor.
Yeah,
that like they were
like how we all wanted Aladdin.
Yeah,
isn't it? No one went to see it, but I wonder if Aladdin might disappear too.
I think okay. Yeah,
I think the Lion King will probably stick around.
Lion King's fine; it's their bread and butter.
Yeah.
I just wonder if they're closing Frozen in order to come back with a bang. Whenever they're allowed to reopen with something new.
Yeah, my theory is we're going to see a bunch of Golden Age stuff like that would be sure to get, you know, theater fans back that I'm sure may or may not be good, but it's like we need bankable names. So either there's going to be probably more stunt casting, there's going to be less risks taken, and we might get some good shows, but it's probably going to be like a reset period as opposed to like a new interesting period.
I don't think anyone's going to be really doing
It might be a mix of both because people will just be so excited to go to the theater.
That's true. And I hope it would be a mix of both because some old shows I would like to see. Like, I was really pumped that they redid Carousel. I got to go see it and I had a great time. But, you know, I don't want it to just all be stuff that, like, I've already listened to. Like, maybe we'll get a Sound of Music revival. I'd be happy about that, you know?
I go see the Sound of Music revival.
I would just always watch the Sound of Music. It's the best.
Yeah.
I would just always watch that show. They just went to see that show on the episode called The Midwife I watched yesterday, which is a show about nuns and nurses in the 60s delivering babies in the poor part of London. So I'm cool. But also,
one more bit of world I forgot about. Speaking of Sound of Music, my mom texted me a picture of when she was a postulant in the Sound of Music in high school.
Oh, that's
cool.
Yeah, I'll send you guys the picture. She's circled herself in a very, very thick circle, so I'd know which one was her. So I think she was mid, how do you solve a problem like Maria?
Oh, that's fun.
Very cute. Any other worlds?
No, that's it.
Shall we move on to the word of the week?
Word of the week.
Costume design. My favorite. Because I talk about costumes a lot, apparently, says Linda. More, I just talk about clothes. Alex, was there any specific question you had about costume design?
I don't have too many questions about costume design. The only one that I can think of offhand is, I know sometimes in a movie, an actor will get to be in the room and like make some costume design choices for like, oh, I want to, you know, they'll be presented with options and they'll go, oh, I like those boots, or I feel like this character, where they have some kind of input. And I wasn't sure if it was the same kind of relationship as in film. And I know it changes director to director, but like, or if it was very much like, oh, you wear what you're told to do because we don't have time.
Yeah, again, I would say it depends on the show and the production and the designer and the actor, truly.
Yeah.
For a Broadway show, there's many, for most shows, you'll have many, many fittings before anything is complete. Mm-hmm. But like, for instance, if you talk about Frozen, they just replicated the cartoon for some stuff, but then Elsa has pants in the second act, which was... Yeah. Fun and different, like a different choice. So that's a choice that designer made based on the character. Do you have anything to say?
No,
I've gone to fittings more than I have.
Yeah, I mean, it's treated just as important as the costume designer is, I think, like, consults with the director and inevitably like has to pass everything through a director. But more often than not, a costume designer comes to like first rehearsal with a pretty strong idea. Every time I've like been in like a production setting where like we're starting from complete scratch and there is a costume designer, they will come in and they'll have sketches already done. They're like, this is kind of what you're going to look like. Like, it's the kind of thing where stuff gets changed only because, more often than not in a costuming, stuff gets changed when it starts in fittings only because, like, it restricts movement or it's...
Like a functional refinement.
There's a quick change that it's too hard to change out of or into.
Like, I see.
Similar to, like, set design where it's, like, they have a pretty firm idea of what they want to do, and it really only changes when, like, this space requires it to be a little different. Or things like that. Like, it's very much a... I mean, there are some directors who are a little bit more overbearing in that regard, but, like, a costume designer is, like, expected to have, like, a complete voice. And a lot of times, like, you work with, like, you know, a set designer, and it's like, what's this world you're trying to build, and I can clothe the people that live in your world.
Making sure the colors are complementary and that they all sort of are a cohesive element. I think it's also different in theater because... More often, I would say, than in movies, you're working with a specific period or place that would have a very specific kind of costume.
And also, there's no quick changes in movies, so you have a much more functional freedom.
That is also very true. William Ivy Long is a costume designer who does a lot of, period stuff, but also really fun. He did the new Cinderella. And he designed the quick rigged dress that twirled into Cinderella out of rags.
Oh, that's fun.
And so that kind of stuff is cool because you're also expected to like make stage magic happen.
Okay.
And it has to be something that can be put back together every night and won't rip.
Most costume designers I've ever met are also like low key kind of historians in that they really have to know if a show is in a period of time, like, or like in the past or whatever, like they really have to like do their, because the thing is like you can design a set that be like, I guess that's the 50s, and you can kind of, I don't think you necessarily, most scenic designers know that stuff, but I think you can kind of get away with it. But like when it comes to like attire, it becomes glaringly apparent that like you didn't do your homework if like
that fabric didn't exist then,
yeah,
you know, or like those shoes wouldn't have been worn with that dress, blah blah blah. What were my other points?
I have a costume design story.
I was gonna say, Oh, fun. The one thing I was going to say the difference between is a built show versus a shopped show. So something that's like very fanciful or in a period piece, most everything will be designed and then built for that show, like sewn and everything for the show. But something like American Idiot or Jagged Little Pill, that whole show, they just bought at the mall. And they bought like 12 of each shorts, like for the, so that it would last however long. And I remember seeing like the first couple shows that I saw that like took place in present day. I was like, I have that shirt. Oh, I have that shirt. Like one of the costume pieces for Nina in the Heights, like I had that shirt. It was from Forever 21.
That's
great. I remember like her showing up on Broadway. I was like, I have that. Or in Margaritaville at the end, I was like, I wore that dress to my bridal shower.
Yeah.
That's fun.
So when you when you guys came to see me in The Disposal, we didn't have a the director got everybody together, and then right when we were going to open, he got sick, so he just tapped out. And so we had to basically set design and costume design and direct ourselves just sort of as a phalanx of actors, because no one knew how to direct really. And so the priest who was in that show as the death row, like last rites guy, he bought his costume at like a dollar store. It was like a generic priest costume. And for the first like four or five shows, he had fixed this when you guys came, but he just put it over his regular clothes. So when he would turn around, you could see a Yankees logo on the back of his t-shirt through like the priest's robe. It was so weird. And I texted you guys. I'm like, yeah, you can see the Yankees logo through his shirt. And well, we're not sure who's supposed to like, tell him. And you went, that's the costume designer's job. And I went, oh, costume designer. We're in our own clothes. We have no director. We're a play about prison. We don't even have bars. They were blind.
An interesting thing with costume design is that like the costume design department and the wardrobe department are the work in tandem, but they're almost separate in a way. In that, like, a lot of times a costume designer will design the costumes, and like at least all the when I was in college, everyone studying costume design like knew how to make what they needed to make, but it was more of a design forward aspect of it. And then like normally there's like a wardrobe department that is in like charge of making the things. Like the costume designer will oversee that, but a lot of times you also, the wardrobe department also sticks around with the production as it's running and keeps the costumes like up to speed and making sure like if they have to like build something for some like new someone coming in that has like a different body shape, like they're the ones patterns. they keep the show running basically. Whereas okay, the costume designer is going to move on to another show.
Yeah, yes. The same way we talked about directors and music directors, like sort of setting the show and heading out on the next venture. Also, there are dressers in the wardrobe department who will physically dress people. They're in charge of, they're usually assigned to either like the ensemble or a principal person, and they will do all of their quick changes, make sure all of their clothes are clean and like there are no holes in anything, that they're safe to wear. Someone fun to follow is the backstage blonde. She's a dresser at Wicked, and she'll sometimes do like the history of a certain costume piece because that show's been around so long. They just recently rebuilt one of the ensemble members' dresses, and they couldn't source the fabric it was made from in 2004 anymore, so it was so like just so slightly different, and she showed you both dresses and so
I kind of imagine every quick change on Broadway is like an artsy SWAT team. It's like go wig.
It's like the best way to describe it is the pit guys in NASCAR when they like roll in and take the wheels off and then put them back on and then they're back driving.
Oh yeah, because like
but buttons and they're riveting a wig.
That is a specific brand of TikTok that I've kind of gotten into. There are a couple of pit guys for racing that make TikToks about like how fast they can do it and like them like practicing. It's awesome.
Backstage Blonde is also on TikTok, but there's no quick changes to document at the current moment.
That's true.
Which is pretty sad. You could try them at home. At our Thespian Society state conference in high school, one of the things we did was the Tech Olympics, and one thing you had to do was a quick change.
Oh, that's fun.
It was like everyone had to do the same like 4 or 5 different tech things, and whoever could do it fastest would win. And I was always assigned a quick change.
Yeah.
Because it's fun. And I was a dresser on a show once, and I once forgot to set out an entire ensemble room's quick changes until about a minute before they were coming in. And I did it, and damn it, did they get on stage.
You had to quick change the quick changes, essentially.
Yeah, all of a sudden we were like, "Hell, this number, we're usually busy during this. Oh no, the dresses!" And we had to set out an entire ensemble's worth of quick change.
Yeah, in college, I was on, you had to do, as like a BFA, you had to have certain number of tech credits. Like you had to be on a crew a couple of times. And I got put on a costume crew for Twelfth Night. And the way they designed Twelfth Night is that there were like basically no quick changes and nobody really changed costumes. So like once everyone got dressed, it was kind of like we were done for the show. We just had to stick around to see like if anything would break or anything, or, you know, we still have to stick around. But also it was me and my buddy Gary and
that's never a good start to a sentence.
And me and Brian Plofsky was in the show, but he was playing like Valentine or whatever. It was only in the first act.
Oh, yeah. He was Valentine because so was I in college.
So he was only in the first act. And so he would get done and come into the costume shop. And we'd play Risk on one of the costume tables until we got caught by Lucy, the costume shop manager. She's like, "Are you guys playing Risk?" We're like, "Yeah, we have nothing to do." She's like, "That's not... Well, who's winning?" It was
Gary. That's really funny.
Yeah, it was fun times.
Yeah, the costume department is fun. Anything else? Any final questions? Because we can move on to the best costume of all. The coat of many colors. Wow.
I want to see a costume designer I want to see a costume designer who is so anal that he insists on putting every single color that they mention in those lyrics in the coat.
Yes.
Like chocolate and mauve and ochre. I don't even know what ochre is. It better be there, though.
I hope that they do.
What is ochre?
I think it's green.
Is it?
I don't know. I'll
look it up later.
Mend, mauve, and it's so funny.
So
we watched Joseph in the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. This is new for me. I have never seen this show ever, and I've probably only heard ever 2 of the songs. So this was my very first introduction, the Donny Osmond 1999 hour 15-minute special on Broadway HD. Alex, did you know this show at all?
No, I knew that it existed, and someone had told me a while ago, like when I was in college, because I liked Superstar, they're like, "Oh, you should try Joseph. Just beware, it's a little not cohesive because every song's a different genre." So I kind of knew of its conceit. And then it always stuck in my mind as a thing that I should go listen to at some point, because when I was a kid, I had a children's Bible that was illustrated, and the Joseph story is in there, and the coat looked really cool. So I was like, I should get around to that show eventually. But no, I'd never heard any of the music before at all. I knew he had a coat. That's it. Didn't even know dreams were involved.
I, a few weeks ago for Broad Wasted's movie episode, we watched Joseph Coat of Dreams, which is like a DreamWorks animated movie.
Okay.
And that was terrible as well, but it helped me learn the story. So I kind of knew what was going on while I watched this movie, because I did not know the story of Joseph. Jaybird, you've got notes on notes.
Oh no, I'd seen this show. They do it at the, in St. Louis, they have the Muni, which is the municipal theater, and it's like the biggest outdoor amphitheater in the country. And
that's why it's called the Muni Municipal.
It's the municipal theater, the Muni.
Shocking.
And
really,
I don't think too hard.
But
I'm like, oh, they named it the Muni. Have fun.
At least that's what I was told. I can't completely confirm that, but I'm pretty sure that's true. But yeah, they do that show like every 3 years or so, just because it always sells out and it does really well. So I saw it there. But I don't remember like really having a really a strong opinion about it until I watched this movie. Just a frame of reference to everyone. I got like 10 minutes into this movie and just texted the Broadway Baby chat like, "Hi, I'm sorry we did this." Like, oh no.
Yeah. Shall we just start with the beginning of Children? And the quietest opening I've ever heard. Did you think it was muted? Time. I thought it was muted.
I didn't think it was muted. I just thought, I think before they started to sing, I was like, did I plug in the wrong show? Because I didn't know. Yeah. Is that part of the stage conceit that it's children watching and they become the choir?
I have no idea.
The children are on stage, like, for, they're with the narrator almost the entire time.
Okay, because I like that conceit.
It's a cute conceit, and here's why it's genius. Anytime
to do it.
Yes, but when you put on a production of Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, it calls for like 36 kids that need to be a part of the production, because all the stuff that they're singing is stuff that they sing on stage. Like they have that, all that is written. That wasn't like added for the movie or anything. Like, yep. A lot of the background, like vocalists, are the kids. Which is a cute conceit, but also when you're putting on a show like that, it's the easiest way to get a community to rally around a show when you have a lot of kids involved, therefore a lot of families involved, and so everyone's going to see their kid in a show, and so everyone, like, it builds a familial, like, relationship with Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. I think there's a lot of people across the country that don't maybe necessarily love the show, really, if they really were to watch it again, but they have fond memories of the show because they're like, oh yeah, my brother was in that. We all went, it was really fun. They had a great time. Like, you got to have a lot of parents, like, you know, involved in order to make this show happen. So from like a meta production thing, it's genius.
Yeah. It's essentially a townwide big deal school play on some level.
Exactly. Yeah. My only issue with it, at least in the structure of the movie, because they're setting up that are all just school children, and this is a lesson being taught to them, is that I don't understand what the lesson, I don't understand why this story is important for children to learn.
Neither do I. What is the lesson?
What is the lesson of Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat?
Everything will work out if you have psychic abilities.
Yeah, it's like, forgive people, but, like, make sure you're a dick for a little bit first. Like,
yeah. I went back and read the story, and I'm like, yeah, the Bible sometimes, it's the good book. It's not necessarily the well-written book.
Yeah, well, that's the thing that I also wrote down in my notes. I was like, I feel like they're sticking too hard to this story because it's in the Bible, but I was like, I feel like you can kind of zhuzh this up a little bit to kind of give it a little bit more of a structure and, like, give it a little bit more of a message to it. I think the one thing that, like, really, like, threw me back about Joseph is that how many devices this show has for just the purpose of having devices.
Well, because he wanted every song to be a different genre, and so
why?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Because it's like the different colors of the coat. Oh, I can actually tell you why. Because it was based on a thing he did in college, where it was a cantata made of different songs or different styles, and then he expanded it with Tim Rice.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
I know it's not the most cohesive thing in the world. I just think a lot of the songs are pretty good.
Andrew Lloyd Webber likes the concept.
There are some really good songs in this. But for me, I'm like, switching genres like this doesn't service the story you're telling. No. And that's where I find it cognitively dissonant.
Yeah.
Because
I was like,
all of a sudden, the costumes are just Aladdin meets Oklahoma for a hoedown.
It's a really strong, there's a lot of really strong choices being banged around in this show. But, like, I don't know why they're being made.
There are parts of it that look like the Who's Tommy, but not the show, the movie, which is god-awful, where everything is, like, really exaggerated. Like, the baker and the butler, like, it's like, oh, that's a little much. Like, it's sometimes, like Joseph is dressed pretty normally, just sort of Bible. And then a lot of other people around him, it's like, why do you have sparklers coming out of your head? I don't...
I will say this. I think, like, from, like, the costumes and, like, a lot of the set design in this is really fun.
Yeah. This makes no sense.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's, but it's, I, one thing I really liked about at least the movie is that it it does a nice job of, this is one of the few movies that, movie musicals are quote-unquote, that, like, I actually feel like I'm watching a stage production and not like I'm watching a movie. And, like, not in a bad way. Like, oh, I just feel like I'm watching a taped show. But, like, they did a nice job of, like, making it very theatrical.
Yeah. Yeah. Because everyone's elementary school auditorium has an endless stage.
An endless biblical godlike void.
And a fog machine budget.
I will say this. Mm-hmm. And this, I won't put this in Little Love because it's a very big love. I think when the genre switching of the music, where it really lands for me, is the one that is completely off the beaten path, and I'm not even sure is really a genre, but they lean so hard into it. Those Canaan Days is just such a great number. It's so, it's just like, it's like a French emotional, like, speak ballad, and I just love it. Just French for no reason. They just, they talk about berets because it rhymes with Canaan Days, and that's the only reason, and I love it.
They're all smoking.
They're
like,
all
literally
smoking.
Every one of them. It's, I guess that's like a French torch song, kind of a, like, that's, I, sure. I, it rings a bell, but yeah.
It's not a genre, but it also is like, whereas the other ones, it's like Western. And this is like French people singing, I guess.
I don't know. They lost me at the weird ballerinas wearing wheat, but no faces at the very beginning.
Oh, yeah.
A little weird.
And I was like, oh, this is what I'm watching.
I feel like that's a reaction.
I really wrote so much. Okay, then so we have the narrator. What's her name again?
Maria Friedman. Maria Friedman.
Maria Friedman. It was Lori Beachman in the original cast. Did you listen to that, Alex?
I don't know which one I listened to, but I listened to whoever whichever cast Jason Donovan was in. That was one of the albums I listened to.
That
might have been the 90s.
Lindsay Hately. The original cast with Lori Beachman is some of the most phenomenal singing you'll ever hear. And this movie was not.
Yeah, she was good.
I like her.
From a costume design perspective, they really committed to her wearing that blazer the whole time.
She looks like a million bucks.
Yeah, I was just like, why is she wearing, everyone else is wearing the most fantastic clothes and she's got a cool costume and they put a navy blazer on her for no reason.
I know why.
Why?
It was 1999.
Yeah, that's true. Donny Osmond just sings the hell out of this.
Yeah, no reason for him to be naked in that jail cell,
he's
but
great.
He sings so good.
Did you notice, Alex, that Donny Osmond's teeth are so straight? Did it call into question everyone else's smile in the whole production?
Not only did it do that, it made me question, does he have more than the human number of teeth? So big and so many. Yeah, he loses a few every day but keeps moving. And if he doesn't keep singing, he dies.
And the one thing I really appreciate about Donny Osmond in that, like, granted, this isn't the most demanding role. Like, vocally it is.
Yeah.
From an actor perspective, like, this isn't the most demanding role. But, like, he commits so hard. Like, you can tell that, like, and he's done this show so many times. But, like, Donny Osmond takes being Joseph in Joseph at the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat really, really serious. And I respect that about him.
Yeah, he's been doing the show since, like, 1992. So this is his,
I just, like kinda,
eighth year as we watch the film.
I'm kind of just like, yeah, you do you, homie, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's the best part of the show. He's really good.
I will say about this movie in particular, they sing to the camera, like, right into the camera, a lot.
They're speaking to you are a school child yourself.
They're breaking the, like, fifth, sixth, and seventh wall.
They're breaking the walls in your house. Like,
yes!
It's so much.
What was your favorite number, Alex?
It's a toss-up between Jacob and Sons and Pharaoh's Song. I think it's Pharaoh's Song just by a little bit. I really like that one.
He was also really, really good. The Pharaoh was, like, he got he has all the looks right. Like, he knows what he's doing.
Oh, that song made me so uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's a little uncomfortable, but the whole thing is.
Yes.
I was sitting there with my mom, and I was just like, oh, we needed an Elvis number. And literally, as I'm thinking that, my mom goes, oh, I like the Elvis guy.
Yeah, there's something for everybody, you know? My favorite, me personally, and it's only because I think the set design of it and the costume design of it are really, really fun. The Potiphar stuff is excellent because it was something I really didn't expect.
Yeah,
it was like a little, some like talking heads, like 80s, like weird, like kind of.
It was. Funky. It stopped making sense.
Yeah, it stopped making sense. Like, and I was like, oh, cool. I wouldn't, as like, sweet, going back to costume design, like if I were designing that shit, like designing this kind of thing, that is not at all what I would have thought, but it wore, it's perfect.
Yeah.
It works great.
I liked Go, 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 Joseph because it's the best song in the show.
Yes. Okay. Did you guys catch in the lyrics of Go, 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 Joseph? I wrote it down.
This is exciting for me.
This show hit me sideways.
I'll also say that we did not watch this together.
No.
She tells him not to give up hope because we've read the book and we know you win. What? The paradox of that is insane.
you're right. It's like a
you're entering into this world that, like, so are they all aware that they're in a story?
Yeah, they're the teachers.
What's happening? Like, that, it was a very casual thing, and I know it's just to fit the rhyme scheme and be clever, but it's like,
yeah.
When the whole concept is that he's not giving up hope.
It's kind of like.
Alex, hit me. What's up?
No, it's kind of like in Watchmen, how, I don't know if you saw the new series, but something happens with Dr. Manhattan where that is influenced by something that happens later, but because he exists at all points in time, that affects the beginning of the story. It's like
so thanks. Great. Oh.
it's only magnificent. You should
no, I know, that. I get it. I know what you mean.
It's kind of like I know it's an aside and it doesn't really, it's just her talking out what he's thinking.
Yeah.
But if you do get really serious about it, you're like, oh, the narrator affects the plot because she said, oh, this is like Terminator. This is.
Yeah. And during Go, 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 Joseph, the narrator, go, 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 Jay Schmidt, you're really great. Go, 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 Jay Schmidt.
You'll make it to Broadway.
not anymore.
Is gone. There a Broadway?
Where did it go? the narrator and Joseph like go up front and are kind of dancing, and then that like guy in the white shawl and the flower necklaces and the sunglasses, and I just was like,
yeah, who was that?
I was like, is that supposed to be God? Are they just hanging out with God?
I believe that's supposed to be God because the first time I watched it, I didn't notice him. And the second time I was like, is that God? I guess. And he kind of looks like Jerry Garcia.
I was like, is that supposed to be God? I was like,
it's like this is God hung out at Burning Man all weekend.
Yeah, like, pretty much. Yeah. Or like God, like has been following around the Grateful Dead. Like it's, I was like, but also Close Every Door to Me is such a good song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really good. Like, I think the whole show floats on that being a really good song. But, like, and then it goes right
into... options up at the end?
It goes, yeah, it's really good.
He sounds great.
He goes, they go right into Go, Go, Joseph, and it just feels so weird. It's just like, it's just, whoop.
Yeah, the narrative...
The whole show.
The narrative flaw of the show is that it kind of goes out of its way, maybe because it's geared toward children, even in universe, it goes out of its way to say like, yeah, it's going to be fine. So it's dramatic because the cast, I think, are as good as they are. But like the narrator, in the wrong hands, that could just really break the tension in a bad way because it almost does even when everybody's really good, you know?
I just think for me, there are so many stories, better stories in the Bible than this one. And I think we, like, people were going through the Bible and they just got caught up on his amazing coat.
Yep.
That, like, they're just like, this is a good story.
He only wears it for one song.
He only wears it for one song.
The worst part.
It's really not even a large part of the story, really.
His brothers are jealous that he got a cool outfit, and so they sell him to slavery.
Yeah.
You know,
the
normal response.
And my favorite part of the Joseph story, and this, the musical cuts off before this happens, but it's right at the end of Genesis, is that Jacob is on his deathbed with all his sons, and he basically does a screw you, screw you, screw you. You, you're cool. Screw you. And he's like, Simeon and Levi, remember? Yeah, because like earlier before the Joseph story, Simeon and Levi like just killed some dude on the street for no reason. Like they're not all, like they're redeemed in the show. In the Bible, it's kind of like, yeah, that was a good moment, but also like, They've got a lot on their hands. And also Jacob screwed his brother out of money, like Jacob and Esau.
Yeah. It's like a whole thing. It's
yeah.
But it's just not necessarily for me. I think I wouldn't necessarily worry about there being a strong enough lesson in the show.
Yeah.
If they didn't structure, at least in the movie, they were like really leaning into hard. It was like, this is a school presentation.
Yes.
You are in your school uniform. You are here to learn
about not doing drugs.
Yeah.
And bullying your friends.
You only have nine, or we have nine lives. You only have one.
Oh, boy.
Also, the cats videos. Remember those cats videos?
Oh, God. I'm trying to bury them from my memory.
They're burned in my eyelids.
Those really, sometimes people recommend online stuff to you. And it's, like, funny and cool, but you're like, oh, you know, that was fun. It didn't necessarily live up to the hype. But, like, when you were talking about that and then sent that, I was like, no, this is exactly as screwed up as he said it was going to be.
Yeah. The cats are I forgot to mention the cats crawl on a giant ashtray smoking one.
Yeah, it's insane!
It's insane! I had a point about Jacob, but I forgot. No, about Joseph, but I forgot what it was. Oh, I guess the lesson of Joseph is believe in yourself no matter what people tell you no, but also not everything. Also, the show goes out of its way to be like, he's kind of the chosen one and everything works out for him, but then it goes bad, but then it works out because he's kind of a Mary Sue, if y'all are familiar with that term. Yeah. He's just too good for this world.
I struggle with personally the concept of like, oh, you were given a gift from God. Like, and they talk about like they sing in the song to use his God-given miracle dream reading ability to be famous, a big success. Feels really weird to me.
Yeah, like, it is very,
and just being like, oh, you got this gift from God, like make that money.
Yeah. Oh, because there's
not like save the world.
Yeah, not like help people. You know, like Solomon was given the gift of wisdom, but like it was his burden, you know, it was like he had to lead
the
nation.
He had to cut babies in half.
No, he didn't cut the baby. That was the whole point. They didn't cut the baby.
I know. I'm making a joke.
Oh. You interrupted our presentation.
We're taking this very seriously. Yeah, I think those are all my notes.
What are these?
Oh, this is me just... I wrote a whole page about how I like Caden Days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One thing I will highly recommend, they just did a concert version of Joseph at Lincoln Center, like with the Philharmonic, I think.
Oh, fun.
And the narrator was split into three people.
Okay.
It was Jessica Vosk.
Okay.
Eden Espinosa.
Yeah.
And Alex Newell from Glee.
Yeah.
And Once on This Island.
I feel like I'd like this show more as a concert than...
Yeah, and Kevin went, and he said it was amazing, and that it was so fun, and then just everyone, they just kind of let everyone, like, wail on all the songs. It was very minimally set and costumed, but Bonnie Milligan sings that part of Canaan Days.
Oh, did she really?
Yeah.
Oh, that was probably great.
Yeah. And Jay Armstrong Johnson does the One More Angel in Heaven.
Who was Joseph? Was it Donny Allen?
It was Noah Galvin.
Who's that?
He was
on TV for a little bit, and then he took over for Ben Platt in.
Oh.
And I think they're dating now, said someone on Twitter.
Yeah. Oh, can you guys help me understand a lyric that I can't wrap my head around from Joe?
Yeah,
of course.
So if, I mean, probably not.
So most of it, yeah. Most of it's pretty self-explanatory, but the, In Any Dream Will Do, while it is a sweet song, it's not my favorite of them, but there's a lyric that goes, the world and I, we are still waiting, still hesitating, any dream will do. Isn't Joseph's whole thing that he doesn't hesitate? He steps up and is the one that makes the stuff happen? So what does that mean in the beginning and in the end? Because they say it twice, and I'm like, I don't understand what the point of that lyric is.
It fits nicely in the rhyme scheme.
There's a lot of that, and that sounds oversimplistic, but a lot of Andrew Lloyd Webber stuff is a lot of it. It's just, it kind of just works. It fits the rhyme scheme. I don't think it means anything other than the word, I even wrote it down. It was one of my first things. I was like, talking about the coat, they're like, it even goes well with his vest. And I was like, they just said that because it rhymed. He doesn't have a vest. I was like, they didn't wear vests back then. And that wasn't even, come on. I don't know why I got hung up on the concept of a vest.
A lot of them are wearing vests.
Yeah. Should we do a little love?
Yeah.
You go first.
Didn't really write any down because I was so baffled by the entire experience. Yeah, I mean, my little love is watching the concert on YouTube, but also the coat is fun, and I get that it's just like, it's kitschy and weird that he has this big coat, and at the point where I like accepted that the coat was just like this weird kitschy song about how he has a coat now, the brothers all like pulled it to the side like a parachute in gym class.
Yeah,
and he like twirled around
that
in
is
it.
That's really cool.
And I was just like, yeah, that's fun.
I need a gif of that, like, stat.
Yeah.
My
and it just makes it look like they're all mad at him just because he's gay. Because he has a big, giant rainbow shirt. Especially, have you seen the pictures of Clay Aiken as Joseph?
Oh, there.
No,
he's just, like, lounging in his rainbow coat.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Apparently, the Noah Galvin, the concert, kind of leaned into that.
Right.
Or maybe just Noah Galvin leaned into it because he was in cut-off jean shorts the whole time.
Okay.
Yeah.
My little loves, I love how when Potiphar's wife comes out, like basically at the very beginning of the song describing Potiphar's wife, they're like, they literally, like I'm paraphrasing, but they literally say, here's Potiphar's wife. She's evil. Like that's all you need to know about Potiphar's wife. She's like, oh, she's Potiphar's wife and she's evil. They literally say she's evil and then that's all you need to know. And then they sing the song.
She's evil and she screws around.
Yeah, that's it. Like, I love that. I also love, I talked so much because I really had thoughts.
I know. Alex, what are your little loves? And maybe you can pop in if you think of any else.
Yeah.
Sure. One, I love that kind of, I don't even know what genre to call it, but it's that kind of like almost synth rock that kind of da 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 da. That kind of, it shows up in Potiphar, and it's precursor to Who's the Thief, which by the way is just a melody that ends up in Superstar later. In da 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 da. Who's the thief? Who's the thief? Who's it by him? I believe this is before.
Yeah,
I don't know.
You've been writing them around the same time.
Welcome to Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Yeah, and the parts that like. Oh, this is when he decided he could probably write an opera one day for Phantom. And then, oh, here's a little bit of Evita.
Yeah, yeah. Two, I love the Jacob and Sons. I like that whole song, but that melody in particular is really fun. And lastly, I love Pharaoh's song. I love the lead up to it. The that melody is so cool. And then I love that Pharaoh is basically Elvis. And it goes a little long, and when he shakes his pelvis at people and they go, that's uncomfortable. But
yeah.
It also works. I love that his voice is just booming for no reason. I mean, not for no reason, but that's my favorite song from it probably. And then just Donny Osmond is so good in that role with
his
brilliant teeth.
He really nails it.
Yeah, his little
work.
Option up at the end of Close Every Door. Oh. Loved it.
I found my little love. And it goes along with just lyrics written for lyrics' sake, just to fit. What So they say in I think it's Go-Go Joseph. That song flummoxes me, just in a delightful way. But they say he's ahead of his time. In what way? In what way, Joseph, are you ahead of your time?
He can see the future.
Yeah.
Can't he?
Other than that, nothing.
Yeah, but that's not.
He wore rainbow coats.
Yeah.
Once.
But also, if we're going along the narrative, if he's telling Pharaoh that he's got 7 years of good times and then 7 years of bad coming ahead, like, if you had someone like read your dreams and then they had like a 15-year plan in place for your like, I don't know, this just seems a little like, just to take it on faith alone.
Yeah, and then basically goes, can I be your treasury secretary?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Treasury of state. but yeah, those are my little loves. What's Harold doing through this?
I want Harold to leave because I think that Joseph is silly and it's goofy, but at the end of the day, I think most of the songs are really good, and if the cast pulls it off, they become even better. I really like it. I know it's silly. I know it's not as good as Superstar or other Weber shows, but damned if I didn't have a good time.
I'll give you that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Harold
is just confused.
He's brought his granddaughter. Well, no, Harold's granddaughter's in the show, so I don't think he's picking up his phone. I don't think...
He forgot it at home.
Yeah, because...
And then he can't figure out how to pick his granddaughter up.
His granddaughter's in the show, and they're like... Home. Yeah, he's not totally sure what he's watching, but he's, like, very happy for his granddaughter. Yeah, that's how you get through butts and seats, man.
Yeah.
If Weber knows how to do anything, it's how to sell a show.
Yeah.
Straight up.
That's true. He's a good producer.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Shall we sing out Louise?
Yep.
What's it going to be?
Evie's luck was running out. His podcast was in jeopardy. A Broadway pod when Broadway's closed is really quite a sight to see. How long will the lockdown last? We don't know. The unthinkable's already happened, frozen close. Then letting out a fretful sigh. His podcast parents said goodbye. We're going to Kimberly's parents' house. We'll come back to see you when this mess dies down. Poor Alex, what you gonna do? Locked up in your room, you do all your gigs on Zoom. Poor Kimberly and her husband Jay. Distancing is cray, will the baby be okay? Close every door to me.
Are you Mega Mix of this shit?
It's fantastic. Keep going.
Keep me in quarantine. Kill all the marquees and the spotlights that shone. Give me a face mask instead of a face. Babies of Broadway are never alone, for we know we shall find our own fangirl kind, for we have downloaded a pod of our own.
Close every door to me, hide all the world from me, bar all the windows and shut out the lights. Do what you want with me, hate me and laugh at me, darken my daytime and torture my night. If my life were important, I would ask, will I live or die? But I know the answers
life far from this world. Close every door to me. Keep those I love from me. Children of Israel are never alone, for I know I shall find my own peace of mind, for I have been promised a land of my own. Answers lie far from this world.